Okay, folks, welcome to the latest edition, the latest episode, the latest great chapter of Life on Planet Porky. And of course, Planet Porky would be nothing without the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones, who is with me now. Leslie Ann, how goes it?
Not bad, Michael. Thank you. Things seem to be not getting back to normal exactly, do they? But there's more rhythm going on in life, I think.
Yeah, there is more rhythm going on. I agree. I was in the city yesterday, City of London. I got a train home about sort of rush hour time, about 6:30. And it was, I would say it was 2/3 packed, you know, like a sort of normal commuter train. I was very heartened. Everybody had a mask on and all that. But the main area of despair is the City of London itself, the financial district. It is absolutely empty. And that's going to be the last to come back as people are now so mollycoddled in staying at home. But, you know, that's for another day. Now, I found out something last night, Leslie Ann, because of my ability to pick up on things, that the guy who runs the board that, you know, was involved in the big row about downgrading GCSEs and A-levels and all that, I think the board's called Ofqual, right, or something like that. The guy who runs it is called Roger Taylor. And, of course, I thought, Roger Taylor, he's a drummer as well. And then I found out he's not only a drummer, not only was the drummer in Duran Duran, he was also the drummer in a group you know so much about, and that is Queen. That's a remarkable coincidence, isn't it? Two rock star drummers.
Roger Taylor. It's a common name, isn't it? I mean, Roger is a name that's gone out of fashion. I don't know any Rogers apart from those two guys, do you?
Well, we know a few unfashionable Rogers, but we'll keep that to ourselves.
we know one in particular, but I don't meet children these days called Roger. I think it's one of those names that has slipped off the radar, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about Duran Duran, I always thought, was that three members of the band had the surname Taylor.
They
were none of them related to each other, but they had two managers, both of whom were called Barrow, who were actually brothers.
Really?
So, that always confused the press.
Yeah, golly, that's absolutely amazing, isn't it? Well, talking about rock stars, talking about Queen, I saw a report this week to say that the opening line of Bohemian Rhapsody is better known around the world than the opening line of the Bible.
That could be true, but I think a lot of us know it by a different version. Is this the real life? Is this just Battersea?
Oh, really?
That's a common one, yeah.
Yeah.
Surprised you haven't heard that.
Yeah, well, I know, but you're absolutely right. You got the line right. Is this the real life? Is it just fantasy? But I was going to ask you, as a God-fearing woman yourself, do you know what the first line of the Bible is?
Well, yes, I do, but I'm not going to say it on air.
Right.
Well, for all kinds of reasons.
Oh, okay. You think it might be blasphemous?
No, I just think this is not the time and the place to quote the Holy Bible.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough. I'll respect that. But anyway, I didn't know what it was, but I found it by looking it up. So there we go. We'll leave it at that. Now, talking about pop groups, very sorry to have to inform the world. Well, the world will probably know now, but I just wanted to add my tribute, that one of the Bay City Rollers has died. Ian Mitchell has died at the, I think, very tender age of 62. That's a bit sad because I was once given a job to go and review the Bay City Rollers at Newcastle City Hall or somewhere in Newcastle. And they were at the height of their fame. You know, it was in the sort of mid-70s. And, I mean, I've never seen mayhem like it. You know, I wasn't old enough to go to a Beatles concert and see Beatlemania, but nothing beat the manic behaviour I saw from thousands of young girls that night. I mean, the Rollers really did hit some heights, didn't they?
Well, they did. It was a bit before my time, actually. But
yeah,
Was it ever about the music or was it just about girls screaming at very good-looking young pop stars?
Yeah, I think it was that. I mean, they adopted this tartan thing. They called themselves the Bay City Rollers because apparently they threw a dart at a map of America and said, wherever this lands, we're going to call ourselves that. And it landed on a town called Bay City in Florida, apparently. And so they called themselves the Bay City Rollers. But they adopted a very Scottish sort of mystique, tartan, all that kind of stuff, you know, and had special clothes made with short trousers and all that kind of stuff. And you're absolutely right. They whipped up a frenzy of adoration from young girls. And as I say, this this particular concert I went to, there were people climbing in through the windows, climbing on the roof, all sorts of things. You know, the van that took them there took an hour to get there because it was, you know, mobbed in the streets and all that kind of stuff. And then when I wrote the review, which wasn't wholly favourable to the music of the Bay City Rollers, I got death threats and people turning up at the Evening Chronicle office wanting to do me in and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. And then the fans grew up.
Then the fans grew up, yeah. One of them's still going, apparently. I think it's Les McEwen, who was the lead singer, and he has to do what a lot of the other bands do these days, and that's, you know, call himself Les McEwen's Bay City Rollers, because somebody else will challenge the idea that he can own the title of the Bay City Rollers. That's happened to quite a few groups, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of that about. So a good friend of mine, John Coughlin, who was the drummer in Status Quo, he goes out now as John Coughlin's Quo.
Does he?
You know, yeah, and actually quite prolific on the road as well, obviously, until lockdown, but they'll make a comeback. They always do.
Yeah, okay, fine. Now then, I tell you what I was going to talk to you about. Are you a Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend girl?
Well, I do have a few diamonds. I've got three engagement rings.
Wow.
Locked away in the vaults.
Sorry, three engagement rings all from the same person or three different people?
No, three different ones.
Oh, really?
Actually, over the years, yeah.
Blimey.
Do you remember, this is a bit rude, but it's worth saying, because it's kind of timely, Joan Rivers, the fantastic female comedian.
I've seen her live. She's brilliant.
She is brilliant. She was very, very kind of blunt and down to earth, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Her line was, if he breaks up with you, swallow the ring, because no man is going to go through shit for a diamond.
Oh, dear me. That's
which I thought was wonderful. Yeah. Not that I would ever swallow a ring.
No.
I think there are other stones which compete. When after I got divorced, I was in Cairo. Mm. I bought myself a divorce ring, which is actually white sapphires.
Oh, yeah.
And they sparkle just as beautifully as diamonds.
Really?
And cost considerably less.
Yeah.
I also bought myself a diamond solitaire when I had my first sort of big hit with a book.
Right.
Because I read that this was a thing among sort of vintage female authors, that they would buy themselves jewellery.
Really?
When they had a success. So I did that. But, I mean, looking back, that was a bit vacuous of me, wasn't it?
No, not at all. When I've had big, you know, wins in my life and that sort of thing, I go and buy myself a Mercedes car.
Well, there you are. So that's the boy version. But I think Audrey Hepburn yearning for diamonds in the windows at Tiffany's, Breakfast at Tiffany's, it was seen to be a diamond, wasn't it? A symbol of success.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Are we less materialistic now? I don't hear many young women sort of yearning over diamonds and talking about engagement rings the way we used to.
Yeah.
I don't think it's such a big thing now.
Well, I must admit, the era I grew up in, girls were always waving their hands into their friends' faces to reveal a ring or something like that. You know what I mean? It was a common sort of... I haven't seen that happen for ages. I haven't seen that happen for a couple of years.
No.
You know what I mean?
The third finger, left-hand thing.
Yeah.
It was a thing among middle-class mums,
about
sort of 15, 20 years ago. The sort of people I used to meet at the school gates at a couple of public schools in London.
And right.
They always flashed these gigantic rocks.
Yeah.
And I used to look at their gargoyle husbands and think, yeah, you really need that beautiful ring.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. I've never worn a single item of jewellery in my life, ever. You know,
have you not?
No. Apart from a watch, right, which I wear if I go to a formal event or something like that. If I'm going to a formal event, I wear a decent watch. Most of the time, I wear a, you know, cheapish watch with a rubber strap. And because you wear a watch, you can get it knocked and scratched and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Well, you don't want to get mugged for it either.
No, you don't want to get mugged for it. You're absolutely right about that. I never wear an expensive watch when I travel on a train or on the underground if I haven't got a jacket on. You know what I mean? Because you're mad. And you're tempted.
So you've never been married, but would you wear a wedding ring, for example?
I feel very uncomfortable about it, to be honest. I think I don't know what I'd do, to be honest, but I've never actually put a ring on any of my fingers, never worn earrings, which I don't think look good on men. I know that's very old-fashioned because so many people wear them these days, but I really don't. You wouldn't see me dead with a ring through my nose or my lip or something like that, you know. And I've never worn you know, even one of those sort of coloured wristbands, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You've never worn a crucifix, a necklace or anything like that?
No, nearest I got to that was when I was about 15 and I wore a thing around my neck which had the crest of Everton Football Club on it. But, you know, that got lost after about 3 weeks and I never got another one, you know what I mean?
So I bet you have a belly button ring.
No, my dear.
You do, don't you?
No, of course I don't. I mean,
oh, go on, show us. No, please, let's have a look.
I can barely find my belly button these days, let alone put a ring on. What on earth are you doing to me? Anyway, talking about rings, I know a woman who's probably got a lot of expensive rings. Her name is Meghan Markle. And if she hasn't got expensive rings now, she soon will have, because we are being told, à ce moment, Leslie Ann, that she and Harry have signed a $100 million deal with Netflix.
What is this all about? I mean, they're telling us that it's going to be life-affirming content and sort of, you know, self-help. I don't believe a word of it. I think they're going to make some massive film about the royal family.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I read the statement about, as you quite rightly say, giving, reaching out, life-affirming, sharing, you know, empathising with, you know, people's problems and all that. Load of absolute bollocks. I totally agree with you.
And that's why they haven't announced the name of the company, because it's going to have some royal connotation.
You think so?
And this is going to close the door forever for Harry to have a way back to his family. It feels to me like he's being led on a sort of wild goose chase here and being persuaded all kinds of things that aren't actually the way they are perceived.
Yes.
And this is going to go horribly wrong somewhere down the line. I had a really weird dream the other night. Mm-hmm. I came down to my daughter in the morning. I said, God, I had such a weird dream. I dreamt I was Meghan Markle.
Right.
And I was on a train in India.
Yeah.
And the train got ambushed. Mm. And these terrorists killed Harry and Archie, the baby, and all of their entourage. Mm-hmm. And I'm Meghan Markle. I managed to get away. And I got into a neighbouring carriage, the next one along or something. And I managed to wedge myself right under the bench seat, flat against the wall, because I'm so skinny that nobody saw me, and I managed to escape, and then I woke up. And Mia said, that's really unusual to dream about being someone else. Why would I dream about being her?
Yeah, that's astonishing. I mean, I suppose if you have a dream like that, it means it's in the back of your mind all the time, doesn't it?
Well, you know, you have these people that read dreams, don't they? They explain dreams to you.
Yeah.
I always think, I don't trust those people. How do they know? They're just people like me. Mm-hmm. I'm just a person. They're just guessing and sort of putting two and two together and making 500. Nobody actually knows what a dream means.
Yeah, no.
Because there is no kind of yardstick. No, you know, God's not telling us what a dream means.
Yeah.
It's quite disturbing, though, to dream about being someone else, especially somebody I don't particularly admire.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And do you know what? I have dreams sometimes, usually when I've not had a drink for a few days. I seem to dream better. I don't know why. And what amazes me is when I wake up and suddenly back to reality, the person in my dream I haven't known or seen for 40 years. Seriously, you know, somebody from school or something like that. Really odd. I mean, the brain must be such a complex machine to, you know, to store away things like that, which then suddenly come to you when you're asleep. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I always think of the mind like a library.
Yeah.
You know, with those very high up shelves that you need a ladder to reach the top shelves.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And you've got all these things on the top shelves of your mind,
yeah,
which every now and again something in you climbs up the ladder and brings that thing down again.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Now, Leslie Ann, our listeners like to hear our Fleet Street tales and you know, tales of derring do in the world of the media. So I just wanted to say that this week is the anniversary of the death of Lord Mountbatten, who was blown up in his boat off a little village called, hang on, I'll remember it in a minute, but it's near Sligo on the west coast of Ireland. And on the very same day, I shot straight over there and I was on the way to Mullaghmore, that's right, the name of the little town, tiny little town where he kept his boat. And I was on the way there when news came through that 18 soldiers had been killed in an explosion at Narrowwater in Northern Ireland on the border with the Republic of Ireland. So on that one day, the IRA killed 18 British soldiers, paratroopers, and they killed Lord Mountbatten. It was the darkest day in the history of relations between the two countries since the Second World War.
He was Prince Charles's favourite uncle, wasn't
He
he?
was,
Uncle Louis.
yeah.
Yeah. I was at school at the time, but I do remember that assassination.
Yeah.
The last viceroy of India, which,
Yes, yes.
you know, that was a major thing, a major door
Oh,
closed, wasn't it?
absolutely. 1948, when he sort of ceded India to independence, you know, quite rightfully, they wanted to rule themselves. But I didn't even know Lord Mountbatten was until he was murdered. I had to find out his history on the way there, you know, on the aeroplane flying over to Ireland. I took a load of cuttings from the library because, of course, we didn't have mobile phones in those days, you know.
We had nothing, and of course, everything is so easy to research now. You
Yeah.
just tap a few kind of letters in, and there it all is. But back then, it was a case, wasn't it, of trawling the cuttings
Oh,
library.
absolutely.
And I remember the lady who used to come round with a trolley and pick up all the brown envelopes with all the cuttings folded up. And if you folded them up wrongly back into the envelope, they used to give you such a telling off.
That's right. They did indeed. Oh, sorry. That's my.
Could you tell your girlfriend not to call while we're on air, please? God, dear, what is he like? He's taking the call. This is outrageous. Come on, share it with us, Mike.
Sorry, it's the gas man. He's come to read the meter. Sorry about that.
What, in the middle of a podcast, you've got to let the gas man in?
Well, no, because I've let him in now on the electronic door thing, you see.
Unbelievable.
So
he says it's the gas man. I'm not sure I believe him.
He says he's the gas man, so I hope it is.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, there we are. So the gas man cometh, okay. but yeah, getting back to Warren Point, which was Narrow Water. It was a town called Warren Point at Narrow Water. I think. Do you remember my colleague Philippa Kennedy?
Yeah, very well.
I've been a colleague of yours as well.
Yeah, I was big friends with Philippa for a while. Haven't seen her for a few years.
I think she's on.
Oh, I tell you where I saw her. Yeah. Robin Esser's memorial service.
Oh, right. Okay.
At St. Bride's, and she read a piece from A.A. Milne, Winnie the Pooh, and made everybody cry.
Oh, blimey, really?
Yeah, well, she delivered it really well.
Yeah, Philippa's an old colleague of mine because she was the news editor at the Daily Express and picked me as her deputy news editor. And I was away on holiday with a gentleman called Roger Taverner in Spain.
Oh, talking of Rogers.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. When I got a phone call, well, the chap came from the front desk. We were out by the swimming pool. And he said, are you Mr. Parry? I said, yes. He said, phone call. I said, phone call? Really? I said,
what, he was Chinese?
He's Chinese, yeah. So I said,
sorry.
So I went back to the desk and it was Nick Lloyd, the editor of the Express. And he said, hello, Mike.
Sir Nick?
Yes, Sir Nick. Well, he was Nick then, actually. He hadn't been knighted.
Yeah.
Hadn't done the grovelling job to Mrs. Thatcher that got him his knife, which he proceeded to do for the next 4 years. He turned the Express actually into a sort of Margaret Thatcher fan club type.
Yeah, he did. And he's got very sore knees still.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. And Nick said, Michael, I said, yeah. He said, I want you to be the deputy news editor. It came right out of the blue, you know. But I was a very good reporter and I'd been in America for 2 years and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I said, right. I said, well, who's the news editor? He said, Philippa Kennedy. I said, blimey. Nick was, that was a very early attempt at sort of diversity in the newsroom. You know what I mean?
Yes, a strategic appointment,
strategic
as we
appointment,
said in those days. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I went back, did the job. I did all the work. Philippa really liked the job. She liked the title and she liked, you know, getting into meetings and that kind of stuff. But she didn't really want to get involved in the nitty-gritty, which is fine. You know, that was her role. She wanted to do it. So I would be doing a lot of the stuff in the newsroom, which I wanted to do and I wanted to be in charge. And she would use the position to be able to go to Harrods and get private viewings. You see what I mean? You know,
she was often out to lunch. I used to see her all the time in different restaurants around town, which wasn't really her job, got to say. You know, the news editor needs to be at the coalface, which is obviously what you were doing.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. And I was very happy to do it. And she wanted to do it a different way and put herself about and make contacts and all that. That was fine by me. I hadn't a problem with it. But point of this story, point of telling about Philippa is she was married to a major in the parachute regiment, Major John Pullinger. And I think I'm right in saying he was at that place on that day because it was the paratroopers who were called in. What happened was a hayrick blew up and killed about 12 soldiers, okay? And then they called for assistance. Another 20 soldiers arrived. And guess what? There was a secondary bomb that blew up and killed the next six. It was a horrendous crime. But I'm pretty sure that Major Pullen, sometimes they can't talk about these things, you know. But he rose to a very high rank in the parachute regiment and then started working in Whitehall, I think. So he was a successful guy, you know. But Ireland was a horrible place in those days. Now, talking about Fleet Street, not wanting to be maudlin, but another old colleague of mine, Ian Royce, has sadly passed away. And I put Royce on the path to stardom. He had applied to join the police because he had so little else going on in life. He'd been taxi driving and all this kind of stuff. And then he could do impressions. So I brought him into Talk Sport to do a couple of little impressions. Thought he was okay, gave him an overnight job. He ended up as being the full-time warm-up man for Britain's Got Talent.
I never came across him, but I was very sorry to hear of his passing.
Yeah, old Royce. And one famous story about him, which you'll relate to. So he's doing the overnight show one night, right? And it goes from 1 o'clock till 6 o'clock. And you have a technical operator in the control room, okay? And they're the only two people in the building. Anyway, the tech op guy was one of these nutters who believed in purified air. So he used to bring his own purifier in, right, to purify the air in the control room, which let out sort of smoke, you see what I mean? Because it was recycled air.
Anyway, steam, maybe.
That's right, steam. Something went wrong with the purifying machine. And instead of it emitting air, it was emitting carbon monoxide. So within about half an hour of the show starting, the tech op was slumped forward over his control panel.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And Royce had no idea what was going on, thought he'd fallen asleep. So Royce just had to keep going. No breaks. I mean, you're supposed to get a break every 20 minutes, you see what I mean, and go to an advert and then go to the news and all that.
And go to the toilet. Absolutely.
Nothing happened. Royce had to sit there and keep doing it for the next 5 hours. He was new to the job and terrified of getting up and leaving the studio and leaving us with dead air. So he literally had to talk through till 6 o'clock when somebody came in to relieve the situation, you know. But I'm very sorry.
By which time the tech op could have been dead.
He could have been dead, but he wasn't, fortunately.
Thank God for that.
Whatever was emitted from this mad machine of his wasn't in great quantities, you know, it just sort of put him to sleep. But fortunately, but anyway, they are the travails of working in our business. Do you like flowers a lot, Leslie Ann?
Yes, I do. I love flowers, but I have to say my heart sinks a little bit whenever I receive a bouquet.
Why?
Because I look at them and think, how beautiful. And then, oh, no, they'll be dead in 4 days. You know, they'll just be a bunch of dead, smelly flowers in a vase.
Yeah.
I much prefer to see them growing in the ground.
Yeah, oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. The reason I ask is because for some unknown reason, because of lockdown, there's been a massive surge in people who want flowers. So, for instance, Morrison's will double the number of expert florists in its stores to 300 this autumn, bringing its tally of florist stations to more than 100 because of a huge demand for flowers during lockdown. People must have wanted to make their homes brighter, presumably.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, again, they only last a few days. And if money is too tight to mention, which it is for so many people right now, would you really waste your hard-earned cash on a bunch of blooms?
Well, I bought flowers during lockdown for one reason. That was to use as a backdrop when I was doing sort of TV shows on Skype or Zoom, you know what I mean? And I bought...
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
I bought tulips, and the trouble with tulips is their heads fall over very quickly, you know what I mean?
Very, very heavy, aren't they?
They droop. My favourite flowers are daffodils. When spring comes and I see...
You only get those in March around St David's Day, don't you?
You're absolutely right. When spring comes and I see the daffodils in the shops, I buy bunches of them and stick them all around the house. I think they're beautiful. I really love them.
They stink. They don't smell very nice.
Well, I never quite noticed that. I don't know whether I've got a defective nose or something. But, I mean...
Not just your nose, darling.
That's a bit harsh. But my favourite poem of all time is Daffodils. Anyway, William Wordsworth, you know, I once hung as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of dancing daffodils. Along the lake beneath the trees, they fluttered gaily in the breeze. I love that poem and I love daffodils. So
that was very beautiful. Nicely delivered. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. And the only other flowers I got, and again, this is for television purposes, because the tulips drooped in one show I did. I mean, literally, you could see him drooping during the course of 2 hours.
Was it what you were talking about? Maybe they were bored.
Yeah, it could have been. Very good idea. So next time I went and got these sunflowers, huge, great sunflowers. And I'm not joking, they stole the show. I got all sorts of messages and tweets and things about them, you know. And they lasted for ages, by the way.
Because they don't normally last very long either. They start to drop their little yellow spiky petals all over the place, and some kind of stuff like poppy seeds starts falling out the middle of them. I always find them a bit of a mess to clear up after.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. But anyway, I don't generally have flowers, but if I do, it's daffodils, tulips. I don't like roses. They're too prickly and, you know, you've got to sort of cut them up.
Now, roses, they're huge. I went to a couple of rose farms in Kenya a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine from college who had been a safari courier out there, and I'd gone on a few safaris with him in Tanzania and Kenya.
Yes.
He'd now turned to rose farming, and he was growing vast numbers of these things, and they freight them semi-frozen to Europe. And it's big business. These guys make a lot of money. He's now a millionaire. It felt very sort of unromantic, unpoetic. These, you know, huge numbers of roses all packed into boxes and frozen. So they don't actually smell of anything. When you buy them at this end, they don't smell like a rose. Yeah. You know, a rose by any other name should smell as sweet, shouldn't it? But none of those roses really had a perfume.
I think you're absolutely right. Now then, Leslie, and telling me about roses, rose farms and all that, I've got a mate in California. He bought a vineyard, right? And he's just got permission to turn the vineyard into a cannabis farm. And he's going to become a multimillionaire because it's now legalized and you can, you know, legitimately grow cannabis. Although I suspect some of it may get sort of siphoned off for other uses.
Yeah, I do worry about this because I've known a couple of people over the years who've fallen foul of their misuse of that drug.
Really? You know? Yeah.
I think back in the 60s, early 70s, when people were all doing that stuff, maybe it wasn't as dangerous. Maybe the variations that are available today are more potent. They certainly seem to have more mind-bending qualities. Mm-hmm. I know people are using CBD oil and that kind of thing for medicinal purposes. Mm. But I'd also know a couple of people who've literally lost their minds through having smoked it regularly. So I do worry about the legalization of it.
Yeah, I it's supposed to be for medicinal purposes, but you can't tell me if you've got hundreds of acres of cannabis growing that people aren't going to abuse it. You know, they will. Do you remember a guy called, I can't remember his real name, but he wrote a book called Mr. Nice. And this guy was an Oxford graduate who started dealing in marijuana when he was at university at Oxford. He got a degree, came out, but then decided to become a drugs dealer. He became the world's biggest dealer in marijuana. I mean, he was lugging cases of £1 million of cash around London, you know, after...
I do remember that book. I can't remember his name, but you know, he was a really good friend of Peter Myers, our old friend.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. And
he used to sleep in the basement of the Bells of Hell in New York.
Golly, that's amazing.
At one point, before he really made it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fascinating story. He was such a bright man who decided it was easy to make money out of drugs than to work, you know. And he was he smoked about 6 joints a day himself and always said it was harmless. But I don't believe that. I think it rots your brain. I totally agree with you. But in the end, the American authorities caught up with him. And I think he did about... He did about 7 years in jail.
Yeah, he did a stretch, He's dead now.
He is dead, yeah, that's right. I'm just going to remember his name. But
yeah, I can't.
He called the book Mr. Nice because he had so many different aliases and so many different passports to avoid evade the law. Somebody misheard his name once and wrote down Mr. Nice and he stuck with it. But anyway, there we are. Peter Hitchens, an old Fleet Street colleague of mine, who now writes regularly in the Mail on Sunday and, you know, for all sorts of political magazines, sharp as a tack, Peter. He wages a constant campaign against marijuana and cannabis. He says it's the start of the end for anybody who starts smoking it. They'll move on to heavier drugs and their life's over, you know.
He's right. Yeah. He is right. Have you ever had it?
I used to smoke a bit of it in New York when I lived and worked there. But everybody did, you see.
You obviously didn't get hooked.
Well, no, I didn't get hooked, but I'm not really a smoker, if you see what I mean. So,
No.
But I mean, it has a lovely effect on you, without a shadow of a doubt. It makes you feel, hey, man, laid back, man, and, you know, the world's a nicer place and all that. And I mean, didn't the Beatles used to wasn't the euphemism about let's go for a giggle, actually let's go and have a joint?
Oh, everybody knows. I mean, there's even a book about the Beatles on drugs, you know, and
really?
we know about their experiences with LSD and so on. But
I've
never smoked any. In fact, I've never even smoked a cigarette.
Really?
I have only ever had wet vices.
Oh, I see. Yes, right. So we won't go into that, but I'm assuming that you mean alcohol might have been involved.
A little bit, yeah.
Yes. What I was going to say about that was that so many people smoked it openly on the streets of New York. You didn't even get arrested, you know, if you were walking up and down with a joint on your hand, and everybody was into it. Now, there's a rock star who I think is a particularly moribund and grouchy individual called Van Morrison, who's 75 today. Have you ever come across him?
Yeah, I have. He's been around a long time, hasn't he?
An awful long time, but isn't he the most curmudgeonly rock star in the world after Morrissey?
He does have that reputation. He's a very eccentric person.
Yeah.
A very sort of one minute stubborn, next minute sublime, you know, very gifted, hugely talented.
Yeah.
A spiritual guy, complicated. Mm. He's got three official children, but his life was a tapestry of marriages and extraneous children, failed relationships. He even had a son with his tour manager at one point, a woman called Gigi Lee.
Mm-hmm.
But he denied paternity. And then it was a tragedy, really. Mm. The child and then Gigi both died within 2 years.
Joy.
So that boy is never counted as one of Van Morrison's real children.
Sure.
Van Morrison's real children, yeah. But, I mean, do you remember Them? Way back, there was a band called Them.
No.
Featuring one Jimmy Page on guitar.
No.
They had an amazing track called Baby Please Don't Go, which I always point people at.
Yeah.
It's that is very early Van Morrison. Really worth a listen.
Yeah, Brown Eyed Girl was his signature tune, wasn't it?
That was one. Dancing in the Moonlight. Yeah. Have I Told You Lately? Bright Side of the Road.
Oh, right.
Here Comes the Night. You know, so many hits.
Yeah, I've worked in Ireland quite a lot over the years, Northern Ireland, and he's a hero there because he comes from there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's born in Belfast.
Belfast, that's right. Yeah, okay, there we go. Now, we can't go through a podcast without mentioning the latest sort of shenanigans from old Meghan and Harry, because of course we got onto the fact that they're now signed up with Netflix, but they're not the only people who are exploiting that, are they? Did we talk about the actors who now only do it for Netflix and get $100 million per film?
Well, we haven't this particular podcast, but should.
Yeah, because what I don't understand is, where does that money come from? Where's the money going to come from to pay those sort of things? You need like millions of subscribers, and subscription TV is now so big. I think that the latest sort of big row about the BBC is going to hold water. The BBC is going to go out of business, isn't it?
Yes, it definitely is. It's a matter of time, isn't it? I mean, do you have Netflix? Oh, God, I've just lost my voice there. I'll say that again.
Yeah.
Do you have Netflix?
I have Netflix. I have Netflix Prime Video. Everybody gets BBC iPlayer, right? And then I have Sky and BT for football purposes, yeah? So
what do you pay for Netflix?
I think it's about £11 a month.
Yeah, I pay $8.99. I never watch it. All my kids watch it and share their account with everybody else, you know. So there's quite a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
It's completely illegal, of course. You're not supposed to share your account with other people.
But you're not.
But they all do it.
Right. Well, how do they do that, like on their tablets?
So yeah, they just give the password to other people and then they can watch my Netflix that I'm paying for. But, you know, how do you control that kind of thing? But I think they must have multi-millions of subscribers to be able to pay this much money to the production companies who are making films and programs for them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, the whole subscription thing now, people don't realise how it's an integral part of life. So, for instance, Danny Baker, remember the BBC DJ?
Yes.
I mean, I've sort of known Danny, you know, 25, 30 years. Not terribly well, I have to say, but...
I know Danny. His wife, Wendy, is a good friend of mine.
Yeah, right, that's great, yeah. And he's in the same business and all that. Now, Danny had an unfortunate experience with a tweet. And so this is what I was going to talk about Meghan and Harry, about Meghan and Harry's child coming out of hospital. And he put out a tweet with a picture and it was all kind of misinterpreted. And he ended up having to leave the BBC. And he got very upset about it. I don't blame him. You know, in a way, he tried to explain that he wasn't meaning to be, you know, hateful or disrespectful, but they wouldn't have it. And so he left. Now, as a result of that, Danny's done what I've already experimented in. He started his own subscription YouTube channel, okay? And he's going to charge either $5.99, $6.99 or $7.99 a month, I think, to take the services of him personally. You see what I mean? So
yeah.
So he'll do some sort of video or some sort of blog or vlog every day that'll be available to the subscribers. And if they've taken a higher level subscription, they get more content and all that kind of stuff. And it's quite a complex thing to try and get people to pay for it. Now, I've already done that because we had a YouTube channel called Two Mikes TV, okay, when I worked with another guy called Mike. And we've got between us about 200,000 Twitter followers, which you have to base it on. And we managed to rope in about 1,000 a month, but we were charging £2.99. See what I mean? So So that was about £3,000 a month. I think Danny's very, very ambitious if he's going to make a big success of something that's costing, you know, up to £7.99 a month, because we have to realise that everybody's paying for so many other things monthly now.
Yeah, and that is a tall order to do a vlog like that every single day, coming up with fresh content, new things to say. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure, there is news every day and you can comment on breaking news and rolling news and cultural affairs and the pandemic and whatever else in his inimitable way. And he is a very good stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen his live show and he's hilarious.
Yes, he is.
You know, he can talk about absolutely nothing at all in the most compelling way.
Yes, he does.
And have us all in fits, you know, especially when he talks about his early life growing up on a council estate in Deptford and his dad bringing home tortoises and lizards from the dock and things like that.
Yeah.
It, very, very funny indeed. But I wonder if even he can sustain that and the interest in it. And also, as you say, people paying for it every single day, month by month. That is hard to do.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And what we used to do is we used to sort of get into a sort of makeshift studio in Covent Garden and do five features in the same day. So we'd do, you know, the Porky quiz, we'd do in the kitchen and do some cooking and recipes and all that. We do, you know, a wine tasting review and all that kind of stuff, and then put them out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and they were about 15 minutes long each. But it's a lot of hard work, that. You're absolutely right, to get fresh material all the time and then to ask people to pay for it. Anyway, look, I wish him the best of luck. But
so do I. I'm very fond of Danny.
Yes, exactly. And I do believe that that is the way it'll happen in the future. You'll be able to be so selective, you'll probably be paying for individual programmes, not individual channels, you know what I mean? So,
well, that's the way music went, of course. Yeah, you know, with streaming, you now don't have to invest in an entire album by some artist.
Yeah.
You can select the tracks that you like and just download those.
Yeah.
No. And that is why the album has died.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the one thing I've been watching on Netflix during lockdown is a series called Breaking Bad. And it is utterly sensational, honestly. It's so gripping and it keeps you on the edge of your seat all the time. And if that was available as a one-off program, I'd just pay for that because it's so good. It's the same as the Peaky Blinders. I'm a big Peaky Blinders fan. And if that was available just as a program, I would, again, just pay for that. Now, Miss Jones, you're a woman of tender years, so you won't remember, will you, Ready, Steady, Go?
I don't remember it at the time, but obviously I know about
it. Yeah, that's right.
I know about Kathy McGowan and all of those people from that era. But no, I wasn't a fan of it in its heyday. No,
no, you couldn't have been because it was in 63. So you'd have barely been able to sort of make out, you know, the words, I suppose, tender age that you are. But anyway, they're bringing it back. Although it's more than 50 years since Ready, Steady, Go last aired, it is still regarded as the high watermark of music TV in Britain. Shows such as The Tube and the less well-remembered BBC efforts like Dance Energy have aspired to its blend of spontaneity and real excitement, but never got there. But anyway, they bring one back to try and unearth new young talent, which, of course, I suppose, brings into the frame at least one of your children.
Well, yes, except that Henry, my son, who's a singer, he's more of a musical theatre performer.
Yeah, I think
so. Rather than a pop performer, so it's not really going to be his kind of genre, really. But I wonder if this is going to work. You know, that the whole style of that show, Ready Steady Go, is terribly dated, and also we don't break pop stars in this day and age the way they were broken back then. It's not all chart driven now.
No.
A lot of it is word of mouth. Yes. A lot of it is to do with live performance and cult followings and so on.
Yes.
I'm not sure that's going to work.
Yeah. No, I'm not either. And anyway, I think anything the BBC does these days, as we've already alluded to, is a bit of desperation. Because
Their days are numbered. They can tell. And that's why they're trying everything possible.
The new guy who's come in there is called Tim Davey. The first thing he did was reverse the stupid decision to ban the words of... Rule Britannia. Okay, so now Rule Britannia will be sung at the last night of the proms, which is in a
quite right too. I mean, sorry, I have some sympathy with the woke brigade on some subjects, but that was a mistake.
Yeah, it was a terrible mistake. Now then, have you ever had any dealings with Ruby Wax?
Yes, I interviewed her once, and she also served me lunch in the Groucho Club once when they were having some charity thing where they got a bunch of celebrities to come in and be the waiters and waitresses one day.
Really? That's nice. I don't know how you found her, but anyway, she's talking recently about, you know, what effect the lockdowns had on her and all that, and she's revealed that she and her husband now live 25 miles apart from each other because that's the way it worked out for lockdown. But have decided that actually it's a good arrangement. They're going to stick with it. I mean, we've heard of these sort of arrangements before, haven't we? Woody Allen apparently used to live separately from Mia Farrow. And I tell you something, I don't think it's a very bad idea. I think that a lot of marriages collapse because people are living on top of each other all the time.
Yeah, you might as well say, what's the point in being married? Surely the point of marriage is to be with the person you love.
Yeah.
If you don't want to live with them, then get divorced.
Yeah, well, I suppose you're right. If I ever had got married, and this has happened when I've, spent, months living with another girl or something like that, I would always insist on separate bathrooms, right?
Yeah, definitely. Joan Collins always says that, and I'm fully behind her on that one.
Exactly. In fact, I would, if I could get my life completely right and I wanted to spend the rest of my life with somebody else now, I'd actually insist on separate bedrooms. Because I think it's far more romantic to sort of creep into somebody else's bedroom than to automatically, by rote, just go to the same bed every night. Where's the sense of romance in that? Where's the sense of excitement and that you're being a bit naughty? You know what I mean?
I agree with that. It's a very Victorian attitude, of course, that the Victorian upper and middle classes routinely had separate bedrooms, and then the gentleman would visit his lady's bedchamber on the rare occasion that he felt frisky.
Really?
Otherwise, she had her private space and her boudoir to herself.
Really? That sounds like a pretty good idea, that. But usually the gentleman concerned would have a string of sort of prostitutes visiting, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah. He'd be out doing all that dogging around and she didn't want him creeping into her bed. Because in those days, of course, they didn't shower. They didn't bath every night. So she doesn't want to be exposed to all that.
Oh, God, no. I think Gladstone, the Prime Minister, was a man who went out and helped what were known as fallen ladies, didn't he? I mean, literally, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, trailing the streets of London looking for prostitutes to take back to Downing Street. I mean, that's pretty bad behaviour.
It's very easy to pour scorn on such women, but fallen women, as they were once known.
Yeah.
But look, many, many families put their pretty daughters out onto the streets because they had no other source of income.
Yeah.
We have to have sympathy with them.
Oh, definitely. I've got sympathy with prostitutes today because most of them are drug addicts who have to, indulge in the horrible things they do to satisfy their habit. And in fact, the people we should go after are the pimps, not the prostitutes, because the pimps organise teams of prostitutes and turn them into drug addicts, so they've got to work to earn money.
Yeah, they're the ones that get them hooked in the first place. It is appalling. Yeah. It should not be happening in this country in the 21st century.
I totally agree with you. Now, talking about separate bedrooms, you mentioned in our last podcast that one person who has a separate bedroom to a husband is Melania Trump. With Donald Trump, the Prime Minister. Now, since we spoke about that, a new book has suddenly sprouted up. It's come out. It's called Melania and Me, The Rise and Fall of My Friendship with the First Lady. And it's written by Ivanka, the stepdaughter. And she reveals Well, it's not. Sorry, it's not written by Ivanka. It's about Ivanka and Melania. Melania, the stepmother, and Ivanka, the natural daughter of Donald Trump. And according to this book, they literally detest each other. That's not an uncommon thing, is it, for stepmother and real daughter?
Oh, it goes right the way back to fairy stories in the Middle Ages, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. The wicked stepmother. I'm not saying Melania is a wicked stepmother, but the key fact here is that Ivanka is 38, yeah. Melania is 50. That's only a 12-year age gap.
Yeah.
So, you know, imagine that child. If Ivanka was his second child with Ivana Trump. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I did quite a lot of stuff with Ivana over the years.
Right.
Along comes yet another stepmother.
Yes.
And there were several in between.
Yes.
And she's now having to deal with this woman who's stolen her father's heart.
Mm-hmm.
Of course there's going to be rivalry. It's I'd be surprised if there weren't,
yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Just going back to birthdays, I've noticed today that Charlie Sheen is 55. Now, Charlie Sheen, the word wild man, doesn't even half describe the sort of chaotic nature of his life, does it?
Yeah, I know. He's been off the rails for most of his life, hasn't he, really? But
yeah.
I don't have a lot of respect for him, to be honest.
Well, I think when you're rolling around on the floor in a drug coma in front of your children and all that, neither do I. I thought he was brilliant in the great film with Wall Street. I thought he was brilliant in Wall Street. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't really remember it.
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant in that, but ever since then, his life seems to have gone south.
We always talk about drunks and drug addicts on this podcast, don't we?
Well,
we need to come up with a few nice people with clean living habits.
Yeah, well, there aren't many of those around, I'm afraid. Not in the world of showbiz and all that. Although, funny enough,
what about Ed Sheeran? He's a nice, clean living boy.
Well, yeah, and he's named his children another ridiculous name because all these pop stars do, don't they?
What, do you think Lyra is a ridiculous name?
I do, yeah.
Why? That's a name, isn't it?
Well, I suppose Lyra's all right, but isn't it Lyra Antarctica, he's called?
Antarctica, I think that's rather lovely because that's, you know, throwing light on the parts of the planet that need our help. I think that's rather a nice thing to do. There have been weirder pop star names.
Yeah.
You think back to Frank Zappa naming his kids Dweezil and Moon Unit.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah.
I remember Bowie had a child called Zoe, although Zoe, Z-O-W-I-E,
yeah.
Was actually the male version of the female name Zoe.
Yeah.
It was Greek.
Yeah.
So that wasn't so unusual, I suppose.
Well, yeah.
What about Katy Perry? She's just named her child Daisy Dove.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Daisy,
yeah.
A nice flower. Dove is the bird of peace. So, no, I'm not against that at all.
And Gwen Stefani and Gavin Rossdale, they've got Apollo Bowie Flynn, Kingston James McGregor and Zuma Nesta Rock.
Good God. Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris Martin and Gwyneth had Apple.
Mm.
Kanye West and Kim have got North, Saint and Chicago. What about David Beckham? Romeo, Brooklyn,
yeah.
Harper 7 and Cruise. I mean, I don't think it's confined to pop stars, is it?
No,
really?
It's not. It's famous people. But I still think it burdens the child with the problem when the child grows up. Zoe.
They always have a straight middle name, these people.
Yeah, and then
it's quite interesting. And they revert to the middle name, which is what David Bowie. His son did.
I thought he changed his name altogether.
He didn't change it. His middle name was Duncan, and his surname was always Jones.
Yeah.
So he's now Duncan Jones.
Yeah, well, I think that sounds a lot better than Zoe Jones. But anyway, there we are. Miss Jones, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. And to all our listeners out there, you will find me at Mike Parry 8. And Leslie Ann, where will they find you?
At LAJ Writer.
LAJ Writer, definitely. Okay, folks, until next time, thank you very much indeed for lending us your ears.
I remember the lady who used to come around with a trolley and pick up all the brown envelopes,
yeah.
With all the cuttings folded, yeah. Up. And if you folded them up wrongly back into the envelope, they used to give you such a telling off.
That's right, they did indeed. Oh, sorry, that's my...
Could you tell your girlfriend not, yeah. To call while we're on air, please? God, dear, what is he like? He's taking the call. This is outrageous. Come on, share it with us, Mike.
Sorry, it's the gas man. He's come to read the meter. Sorry about that.
What, in the middle of a podcast, you've got to let the gas man in?
Well, no, because I've let him in now on the electronic door thing, you see.
Unbelievable. So he says it's the gas man. I'm not sure I believe him.
He says he's the gas man, so I hope it is.
Anyway,
there we are. So the gas man cometh, okay? If I could get my life completely right and I wanted to spend the rest of my life with somebody else now, I'd actually insist on separate bedrooms, because I think it's far more romantic to sort of creep into somebody else's bedroom than to automatically, by, you know, rote, just go to the same bed every night. Where's the sense of romance in that? Where's the sense of excitement and that you're being a bit naughty? You know what I mean? So he literally had to talk through till 6 o'clock when somebody came in to relieve the situation, you know. But I'm very sorry.
By which time the tech op could have been dead.
He could have been dead, but he wasn't, fortunately.
Thank God for that.
Whatever was emitted from this mad machine of his wasn't in great quantities. You know, it just sort of put him to sleep.